From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, new messages from Seth, the discarnate entity. Here's what's happening. Lawmakers moving closer to impeaching Republican President Donald Trump as members of a House of Representatives committee debated formal charges that are likely then to be sent to the full House for a final vote next week. Then we'll see what happens. Multiple U.S. families have reported incidents of Ring camera systems being hacked in recent days, raising questions as to whether the systems are allowed and allowing hackers to access to people's homes without ever having to set foot inside. The owners of Ring security cameras in Mississippi, Georgia, Florida, Texas have reported incidents where hackers tormented families with racial slurs, encouraged children into destructive behavior, and demanded a ransom in Bitcoin. Now, I sent this story to Lauren Weinstein, our expert on the internet, said, Lauren, what do you think about this? Can you comment on it tonight? And he replied back to me, you will have no idea what I'm about to say. Lauren, how bad is this thing?
Yeah, it's kind of ironic because there's so much going on relating to Ring right now. I mean, this hacking is bad enough. I mean, it even apparently includes a podcast letting people listen in to the hacked Ring units live.
Jeez.
Which is, you know, pretty spectacular, right? But really, this isn't anything particularly new. We have talked before about problems with in-home cameras.
Yeah.
Baby monitors, all these things that can be hacked this way, especially if people don't change the login names, they don't use good passwords, and they don't use the two-factor authentication when it's offered. But there are other controversies about Ring right now that are even bigger in terms of what's going on, and most of this relates to when they were purchased by Amazon, when they were acquired by Amazon. And it basically amounts to the creation of a private surveillance state based on Ring.
And what exactly is Ring?
Ring is a doorbell camera.
Okay.
You know, it collects the video and it can send the video to the cloud and it can be used in various ways. And that's what's key here. They have been making agreements and contracts with police departments all over the country, giving them free units as an enticement, easy access to users' video data. The details of those contracts tend to be kept very quiet. Ring dictates exactly what the police are supposed to say about it publicly. And since then, there have been accusations of racism and privacy problems in the way the product is pushed, the way the footage is collected, how it's used. And if that wasn't bad enough, just a few days ago, it was revealed that apparently the Ring Neighbors app, which is the app people use to share video footage,
mm-hmm.
and notices and such, that app is apparently, in many cases, leaking data about the locations of people's cameras.
Oh, jeez.
With latitude and longitude precision to 6 decimal places. So that's very, very precise. We're not talking about a block. We're not talking about next door. We're talking about within a square foot.
So not only can they hack the camera, but they can find out where the camera is.
Exactly. So while many people have been worried about our government creating a 1984-type thing like they have in China now, we have Ring working with the government, getting people to voluntarily participate in what could turn out to be the same kind of thing, and most of the people doing this don't have an inkling of what the risks could be.
Well, we're going to keep telling them. Lauren, thank you so much. Listen to this story. A deceased Florida man whose partially eaten body was discovered in the mouth of an alligator died apparently from a methamphetamine overdose before the 11-foot reptile discovered him in a canal. A kitten born with 2 heads is fighting for its life after surviving a difficult birth. We've got the story in the news at coasttocoastam.com. This adorable little gray and white baby cat was born in central Thailand. The owner said she returned from work and found her Persian cat Snow in labor, but struggling to give birth to the last kitten. So she rushed her beloved pet to the vet, where it underwent a cesarean section to safely bring the 2-headed female kitten into the world. Isn't that something? We've got that story again in the news at coasttocoastam.com. American perception towards prescription drugs and more natural health solutions appears to be undergoing a significant shift. According to a survey of 2,000 Americans, half have used a natural remedy now to treat an ailment over prescription medication. Furthermore, the survey, which was commissioned by Remedy Review, found that almost 75% of these respondents believe natural remedies are better. Elon Musk's SpaceX will be sending cannabis to the astronauts on the International Space Station. I think this is a real story. The space dwellers can expect their delivery to the space on a SpaceX Dragon capsule scheduled to make its next trip in March of 2020. What else is going on in the skies? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what do you have for us this week?
Well, good evening, George. And I don't know what's happening, but I'm being inundated with good reports. This has been going on for the last several months, and it suggests to me that something major is taking place, although I have no proof for that statement. First case I'd like to share with our audience comes, it arrived just this afternoon. A gentleman writes that he and his family were on a cruise ship in the Bahamas on the 20th of November, Wednesday evening. And they were lounging on their the deck of their stateroom, the balcony of their stateroom, when all three of them at the same time saw an object coming at very high speed from the west. At first, they thought it was some kind of meteor, but very quickly their attitudes changed towards it when it suddenly slowed down. It executed a figure eight in the night sky above their heads, George, going from headed east initially, then going north, then going south, and then going east again. Very dramatic event, and have no explanation for a meteor that would do a figure eight. Next report I would like to share, I was hoping to get into my report last week, wasn't able to do it. It comes from Plymouth, Indiana. Gentleman writes that he was taking down a ladder from a wall, and he was glancing up at the top of it when his attention was drawn to an aircraft that was flying overhead. As he watched the aircraft for just a moment, he saw a very metallic-looking, distinctly round object cut across the exhaust trail, the contrail behind the aircraft, moving at very high speed. Probably, he said, he thought about two or three times the velocity of the aircraft. Very interesting report. Unsettling if it's true. Next report I'd like to share comes from Independence, Kansas. A woman who describes herself as a professor, university professor, writes that she and her husband and her son were driving to a school when they saw what at first they thought were meteors approaching their position. Suddenly they realized they were not meteors at all. They were descending, and they were strobing lights. Four of them initially, then they were joined by three more apparently, but the lights were strobing in a very distinct and unwavering manner. Next report comes also from Kansas, Victoria, Kansas. A woman writes that this morning at, this afternoon at 18:25, yesterday, the 11th of December, she and a friend were admiring the clear night sky. They had 100% view from horizon to horizon of a clear night sky, and they saw four distinctly orange-yellow lights streaking at them. They had no idea what they were, and they suddenly executed a turn, accelerated, and disappeared from their sight. And the last one I'd like to share has to do with the general election that just took place in England. Gentleman writes from Wales that he was up at 1:30 this morning admiring a victory that he supported, when all of a sudden an intensely bright light illuminated his bedroom, at which point all of the lights in his neighborhood went dark. He rushed to the window to see if he could see anything, and he saw a very large, round, intensely bright ball of light that strobed a second time and suddenly streaked off, disappeared from his sight, and seconds later the lights came back on in his neighborhood. So there's a lot going on, and if people see anything unusual, I encouraged them to submit reports using our online report form at ufocenter.com.
Great. Thanks, Peter, for those reports. Up next, the origin of everything and what we know about the universe that just isn't so. That's next with David Roland on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, David Roland with us. David has expertise in several fields and is a philosopher of types in the original sense of the word, meaning a lover of wisdom. Now, he's one of Canada's foremost experts in holistic nutrition, author of 12 highly acclaimed health publications. He's an innovator, creator of the NutriBody Assessment, founder of the Canadian Nutrition Institute and the Edison Institute of Nutrition. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Now, what is a nutritionist with your background doing talking about astrophysics?
Well, I just have an insatiable curiosity and a mind that doesn't quit. And what happened was I saw the movie The Theory of Everything about Stephen Hawking.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized his dilemma. He was trying to create a theory of everything through mathematics by getting one equation or a series of equations. And I thought, well, I don't think you can do it with mathematics alone. So I had a crack at it. And about 3 years into writing my book, The Origin of Everything, I realized, hey, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. This Big Bang that supposedly caused everything couldn't possibly have happened. So that was my introduction to astrophysics.
And I want to know what happened before the Big Bang, and I can't get a physicist to tell me. I can't. I have interviewed them for a million years. I can't get one physicist to tell me what was on before the Big Bang.
No, because it's a logical non sequitur. If the universe is defined as everything which exists, if something happened before the universe, then that was also part of the universe. It doesn't make any sense. And I noticed that astrophysicists, cosmologists today realize that they've known for a long time that nothing cannot be the cause of something, but their mathematics tells them, yeah, there was a Big Bang. And so they believe their math instead of their logic.
I mean, it is probably, David, I think one of the most mind-boggling, perplexing questions we will ever encounter. What do you think?
Yeah, except I have the answer.
And that's why we have you on tonight.
Yeah, it couldn't possibly have happened.
Now, keep in mind, every physicist I've talked to can't give me the answer, so I'm going to be very fascinated to hear your take. Now, as you got into this motivation to try to uncover the Big Bang, tell me the methods you used to get to the conclusion you're going to tell us tonight.
Okay, well, I just simply was reading. I read Stephen Hawking and started from there. And I thought, okay, so this is a Big Bang, and physics knows what's happened afterward. At least they think they do. They've got it all documented with their equations. But I kept asking, well, yeah, but how come? You know, if that's the way it happened, there has to be a reason. What's the reason? I didn't get anywhere with physics because you can't.
You can't.
No,
There's no answer with physics.
That's exactly right. And now, what I discovered is that in 1912 or thereabouts, there was an astrophysicist named Vestal Slipher who studied what he thought were the retreating velocities of nebulae. And he studied the redshift of the light coming from these nebulae that we now call galaxies. Now, what a redshift is simply light attenuates over extreme distances through space. When light is given off, say it's given off in the middle of the light spectrum, it's a white light. But then as it goes across extreme distances, its frequency drops into the red end of the spectrum. And so that's called a redshift.
Mm-hmm.
So he thought that redshift was a Doppler effect, and that redshift indicates velocity. But a Doppler effect is entirely different. A Doppler effect is really a distortion of frequency. And to give you an example, you're standing outside, an ambulance is approaching. As it gets closer to you, the frequency, the pitch of the siren seems to increase, seems to get higher. And then as it goes away, passes you and goes away, the frequency drops again. But it doesn't actually raise or doesn't actually drop. The frequency, say it's the pitch of A of 440 hertz, that's the constant frequency of the sound emitted from the siren. But because air is an elastic medium, the sound waves get bunched together as it approaches you. The sound waves hit your ear more frequently, giving a distortion that feels like the pitch went up, but it really didn't. So Slipher thought that redshift was a Doppler effect because he noticed the difference in frequency and wavelength of the light, assumed that the source of the light was retreating. That error was in 1912 and has been repeated every year since.
What exactly is the Doppler effect, David?
Well, that's what I was describing. The Doppler effect is the bunching together of sound waves it's the air resisting the movement of sound. But in space, there's no elastic medium to resist the light that's coming. So if Slipher had really understood the Doppler effect, he would have known that the sound wave is always the same length of that frequency of sound. And he would have known that a redshift couldn't possibly be that. But it's crazy, but NASA today is measuring the redshift of galaxies and saying, hey, this one's moving away, and it's nuts.
What would you say is the single largest scientific error about the Big Bang theory?
That's it.
That's the one?
That's the one. And it's so bad that scientists refer to it as a Doppler redshift or a redshift Doppler, and they're in two entirely different phenomena.
Yet it still doesn't explain how that even occurred.
Well, yeah, I can explain how it occurred.
I mean, we're leading up to your theory on what started all this.
Oh, what started all this?
We'll do that after the break.
Okay. Well, yeah, they're
all wrong, aren't they? All of them.
There was no Big Bang. There couldn't possibly have been a Big Bang, because, as I said, if there was a cause before the universe, that cause must have been part of the universe. It's a logical contradiction, and there could not have been a point in space where the universe started, because there wasn't any space. Without a universe, there's no space. It doesn't make any sense.
See, theologians would bring God into the equation, but that still doesn't answer how God started. I mean, I want an answer.
Yeah, exactly right. And it's funny you should mention that, because the author of the Big Bang Theory, he originally called it the theory of the primeval atom, or the cosmic egg, was a Catholic priest, also an astronomer. And he came up with these equations that justified his preconception that God had created this cosmic egg that subsequently blew up to create the universe. And then there was a scientist who in 1949, I think it was, on a BBC radio show, called sarcastically called it the Big Bang, and the name stuck.
And well, stay with us, David. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. A couple of David's books, The Origin of Everything and What We Know About the Universe That Isn't So. His website is his name. It's David Rowland, ROWLAND.name. That's his website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll take calls with him next hour, and we'll try to get into what the heck started all this. I am back with David Rowland. We'll take calls with David next hour as we're talking about his thoughts about the universe and how it started. I don't even want to bring up the Big Bang anymore, David.
Good. The biggest fallacy of all about the Big Bang is that there was a point in time in which time began. That's a contradiction in terms.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's time, confusing all by itself.
Yeah, time is in the universe. The universe is not in time, which means that the universe is timeless. It has no beginning and no ending. It's from our limited 3D perspective, it's always been here.
Well, then you've just touched on something too, our limited perspective. There's got to be something else that we're missing. Sometime, somewhere, somehow, we're missing some equation here that makes sense.
It goes beyond equation. When I was studying particle physics, an electron jumps from one orbital to another. It doesn't make a path from one orbital to another. It just disappears from one and reappears in another. And there's a microsecond difference where it's just not there. So I asked myself, where does it go? It's the same electron. And I figured out, well, there must be a non-physical realm that it visits and then comes back. And I thought, well, our minds are non-physical. Like when you say, this is my body, this is my brain, who's speaking? Some energy, entity, other than your physical body is speaking. So that means that we, the essence of who we really are, is non-physical. And the essence of the universe is non-physical. There's a non-physical realm.
Is it real? Is any of this real?
Well, it has to be, because we couldn't be inhabiting these bodies and talking with each other. That's
well, you would think, but I mean, everything else is confusing. Why can't we just add that to it?
Well, but you don't have to add that to it to figure out what's going on in the universe. Because some scientists are studying a plasma physics now. And the universe is filled with hydrogen ions, which is like an electrically charged hydrogen gas. Hydrogen is the simplest element. And then the hydrogen forms stars, like our sun, which then forms helium, and then as a fusion reactor, it creates all kinds of elements. So stars are being created all the time. So the universe is being continuously created. And at the physical level, it's through the plasma physics.
Let's get a little controversial here, David. You believe Einstein was wrong with his theory on general relativity, don't you?
I do, it's really simple to understand. His special relativity is sublime. His special relativity is the E equals mc squared equation.
Energy equals mass times the speed of light squared.
Exactly, that's the mass equivalent equation that says that basically energy is matter is energy. Slow-moving energy. One can be converted to the other. Energy, matter, matter, energy. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. So, but he went from the sublime to the ridiculous when he came up with his general relativity. General relativity is the geometric theory of gravity. He used a four-dimensional space-time model that says that space-time curves, and the curvature of space-time imparts gravity to massive objects like stars and planets and so on. Well, that just doesn't make any sense, because first of all, space-time is not a thing. It's not real. Space is, you know, if you take a look out the window at night, the stars, and you see there's space is a nothingness. It's an abstraction. It's a thought that in this space there are things. There's stars, but the space itself is not a thing. Similarly with time. Time is not a thing. Time is a thought about how things move and sequences of events and so on. So you can't take two non-things, space and time, and come up with a thing. It doesn't make any sense. And then for this curving space-time, that's really a geometric concept. But geometry is abstract mathematics. Abstract means existing in thought, not in matter. So geometry cannot impart physical characteristics like gravity to objects. It doesn't work that way.
With drums rolling, let's hear from you how you believe all of this, if it even did start, how it came to be.
The universe is as simple as a thought. The universe was thought into being. That's the bottom line answer.
Well, don't lose me here. Tell me more.
Well,
I don't want to put you in the category of the other physicists.
I definitely not when I make that statement.
In all respect, please.
Yes.
It's not easy, is it?
No. It is not. It's that. Okay, I can give you an example of how, if we go to DNA, for example, the DNA in living creatures is very, very complex. It's a binary computer code with billions of digits in it, binary digits. Now, that could not possibly have evolved. There's no way that four different amino acids could have come together and then lined themselves up in a precise sequence of thousands, millions of billions of bits of information. That it's been pre-programmed. There was a programmer who programmed DNA.
So let's go back a little bit. Yep. All scientists conclude that the universe is about 13.8 billion years old. I mean, they generally all agree to that. Is that correct?
They agree, and they're all wrong.
All right. But let's talk about their thoughts right now. Okay. So they agree it's 13.8 billion years old.
Mm-hmm.
So my question to them, if I had a whole group of these guys in a room and women, and they said it's 13.8 billion years old, I would say, so what was at the 14 billion year old level? What was there? And I bet nobody could answer that.
They can't. No, they can't. They can't. And here's how they got to 13.8 billion. They took Einstein's equations from his general relativity, working backwards in time. And they came across a couple of glitches where it didn't work out. And they said, oh, well, that instead of saying maybe the equation's wrong, oh, the universe must have exploded very fast initially, faster than the speed of light, and then it slowed down again. See, in other words, they tried to alter the evidence to suit their theory.
I'm so practical, David, and maybe that's not the way to think here. But to me, if you're going to build a car, you're going to start from scratch, and you're going to get your pieces and your parts, and you're going to begin to assemble this one thing at a time. And you can go back to the beginning of that car and say, well, the first thing I did is I got, you know, the frame, and then I got the tires. Yeah. And then you'll say, well, where'd you get the tires? Well, I got it from a tire company that got it from poured rubber from a rubber tree. So you can go all the way back and track the beginning of something. You can't with the universe. You can't start it somehow.
No, you can't. You can take any given star and say, okay, there was a start there, and then from that star came, you know, dust. And
right, but as you go back and back and back to the beginning of all of it, you can't answer that.
because there was no beginning. You can't go back to a place or a time that never was.
See, and that brings up the other question. If there was no beginning, I don't comprehend that.
But the thing is, there's continual beginnings, continuous creation.
Didn't something have to start something? Well, you know what? It's like the chicken and the egg, right?
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, the egg comes from the chicken, but what came before the chicken?
Okay. The only thing I can think of is there was a universal thought that from our perspective, we have to say at some point in time, but that's not true because in the non-physical realm, there's no such thing as time. There must be an original thought that said, okay, we are beings of thought. We are thought beings, or we're spirit beings, whatever we want to call ourselves. Let's create a physical reality. Bingo. There it was. That's all I can come up with.
We're going to have fun with phone calls next hour because I'm going to ask our listeners to also come up with their own thoughts and theories on how they think all of this may have started as well. Must you include religion in order to get this answer?
Absolutely not.
You do not have to.
Okay. Nothing to do with it whatsoever.
What about dark energy? What is that? Does that exist?
No, it does not exist. Here's what happened. The Big Bang Theory says, okay, the universe is expanding at such and such a rate. Then the mathematics says, oh, no, it's not expanding quite that fast, so there must be some dark matter out there holding it back. And so we can't see this matter. It has no properties, but we know it must be there because of its gravitational effect on galaxies. Then he did some further calculations and realized, well, but it's now expanding a little bit faster than that, so now there must be some dark energy opposing the dark matter to justify our math. It doesn't make any sense at all. Neither dark energy nor dark matter exist.
Do you think we will ever get a total answer as to any of this?
The closest you can come is my book, the Origin of Everything.
But a physicist, they would rip you up. They'd say, you're a nutritionist, for crying out loud. You can't come up with this. We went to school. We got degrees in physics and astrophysics.
I get that all the time. But, you know, I post on LinkedIn, and belong to two theoretical physics groups. I post my articles about the Big Bang never happened and Einstein was wrong about gravity. And I don't get any – nobody can criticize my argument.
They don't tear you apart?
They tear me apart by saying, well, you didn't go to our schools, and so what do you know? But I'm not a nutritionist. I'm a philosopher. And that you cannot come up with a comprehensive theory of the universe through mathematics or physics. It involves philosophy also. And that's why the subtitle of my book is The Origin of Everything, Uniting Science and Philosophy.
I think there's something else here, though, David, that all of us are missing. There's something here that is right under our noses, and we're not coming up with that answer to explain a lot of this. Would you agree with that?
If you use we, yes. But what is your theory, George?
I don't have one. Okay. I'm baffled.
Okay.
All I can say is I do not believe, nor do I understand, the so-called theory of a minute particle exploding, and then all this matter that we see today in this universe, and we do see it, the stars and the planets and everything else, I don't believe that started from the explosion of a little tiny dot so minuscule you couldn't even see it with the naked eye.
No, it could not possibly have happened. It's basically a myth, a fairy tale.
Is it conceivable, now that we need to work, that some kind of other civilization started us from another universe, but then you have to explain, how did that one start?
Exactly. So if there is another universe, it's part of the same universe, because the universe is defined as everything which exists.
Has this been posed to any kids in school who are studying physics? I'd love to get their answers.
Yeah, me too.
Because I don't think they can. Is this conceivable? There is no answer?
Yes. And if you're saying, did the universe begin? The answer is no. It's always been here.
That is your definite theory.
It's not a theory. It's
well, that's your definite statement.
That's my definite statement, because if there was a universe, there wasn't, until there was a universe, there's no such thing as time. So therefore, the universe could not have begun at some point in time. It's a contradiction. It's a logical contradiction. It could not have happened. That means that the universe, from our perspective, has always been here. From the bigger perspective, the universe has no beginning, has no end. It's a question you can't really ask, because it's a non sequitur.
Our special guest this hour, David Roland. We're going to take calls with David next hour. His website linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and his book is called The Origin of Everything, Uniting Science and Philosophy. What would theologians say about all this? Would they just take the God position, David?
Oh, for sure.
That's the easy answer.
That's who started the Big Bang Theory, was a theologian.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Edwin Hubble, what did he think about all this?
Edwin Hubble, oh my, he fudged his data.
He did?
Oh yeah.
And we named a telescope after the guy.
Yes. And now, in my book, What We Know About the Universe That Isn't So, I document his errors. He made some very unfounded assumptions, false assumptions about distances and velocities and so on. And he made calculations of distances. And I compared his distances to NASA's distances to these same galaxies. And he was out by a factor of sometimes like 26 times.
Jeez. All right, David, stay with us. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back in just a moment and take phone calls for next hour, including folks who will give our thoughts and theories as to what they think started all this.